This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time, as he is every week, John Gizzi, political editor of Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Very busy week in politics. Let's start with, of course, just 40 days until the midterm elections on November 2nd. On Thursday, House Republicans and Republicans running for House seats unveiling the Pledge to America, very reminiscent of the Contract with America. Not a ton of details, but certainly laying the framework for how a new Republican majority would lead. How important is this in the Republican efforts to take over in November?
Well, it's important in the sense that all of the Republican candidates so far have weighed in with strong statements in favor of it. In addition, a number of the potential presidential candidates have hailed it. Mitt Romney, Governor Tim Pawlenty, and, of course, Newt Gingrich, the father of the 1994 Contract with America. It means that Republicans are on the same page and they will nationalize the election. Now, there has been some criticism that this includes charts and that it's a little longer than the 800 words that made the Contract with America so succinct. On the other hand, we have agreement, we have enthusiasm from the Republican House and Senate candidates, and interestingly, we are getting praise from both cultural and economic conservatives. A significant difference is that, albeit to a small degree, this pledge includes mention of the issues of the rights of the unborn and the sanctity of marriage. The Contract with America did not touch social issues, and as Congressman Mike Pence, the chairman of the House Republican Conference, told me, this is important. So it's a good thing as far as Republicans are concerned.
John, of course, the Democrats are slamming it. They say it would be going backwards. Jim Clyburn, the number three Democrat in the House, called it a plague on America. But let me throw this question at you. If I'm a disenchanted voter, which I think a majority of the folks would be, and I'm looking at these candidates who are basically running against Washington, does this hurt the insurgent Republican candidates by basically lining up with the Republicans already here, the John Boehners, Eric Cantors, who you might agree with, but basically siding with Washington figures?
It's an intriguing proposal. My guess is that it can be seen that way, and I have a feeling there are those in the disparate Tea Party movements who will try to make a case for that. That said, it should be pointed out that a number of Republicans are going to be reelected. In fact, I'm almost willing to bet that all the sitting House Republicans will be reelected. And the fact is that you need the people already there to make a majority. They're the fellows who've been voting no on the Obama agenda all along. I do think the voters will be intelligent enough to realize that. And the answer is no. As much as a case can be made, I don't think voters will buy it.
John, let's talk a little bit more about the Tea Party in a tangential way, because you mentioned them just a moment ago. First of all, in Alaska, Lisa Murkowski defeated by a Tea Party challenger, Joe Miller. She has now launched a write-in campaign. The very early polls since that happened show that Joe Miller still is in pretty good shape. What do you expect to happen there?
I talked to Joe Miller on Saturday night, 9:45 my time, a lot earlier in Alaska, and he believes that with Lisa Murkowski surrounded by Democrats and the leadership of the native corporations in Alaska, most of them being Democrats, she will move left and simply divide up the vote against him with the Democratic nominee, Sitka Mayor Scott McAdams. He said all she can do is go left right now to get support. Lisa Murkowski does have $1.8 million in her campaign kitty. She obviously was very overconfident up to the primary because she kept all of this in her holster. The last time an Alaska senator lost renomination and ran as an independent was Ernest Gruening, Democrat, in 1968, and he got about 17% of the vote as a write-in candidate. I believe Lisa Murkowski will do a lot worse than Greening, who's a former governor of the state and an important figure in its history.
John, let's move to Delaware, where now there are some rumblings that Mike Castle might launch a write-in bid based on his public comments. It seems like he doesn't really want to do it, but said he hasn't closed the door on it. What do you expect there?
He will probably go out with a little more class than Lisa Murkowski. Mike Castle does not like Christine O'Donnell, but he also knows that he's getting into political fool's gold when he opts for the write-in and the long-shot method. Rightly or wrongly, it's going to be perceived by the voters as sour grapes. It's only succeeded once in history. Only one person was ever elected to the Senate as a write-in candidate, Strom Thurmond of South Carolina in 1954, and only three people were ever elected to the House as write-in candidates. My guess is that he will choose the better part of valor.
John, let's quickly talk about another couple of key issues. Of course, all these people hoping to get to the U.S. Senate, where earlier this week the defense authorization bill was held up on a procedural vote, largely because the majority tried to attach some other issues to it, namely an effort to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. There was also the immigration-related DREAM Act that caused Republicans and even a couple of Democrats, both from Arkansas, in fact, to not allow this to go to a final vote. What's the fallout?
Well, the fallout is that as we get closer to the election, I think Democrats are getting a little wary about some of the things that are being pushed by Senate Majority Leader Reid and House Speaker Pelosi, not to mention the man at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Don't ask, don't tell is a controversial policy. It gets the conservative base very activated. I spoke to Elaine Donnelly, a longtime opponent of the policy and defender of the military, who helped orchestrate the strategy that beat it on the Hill. And again, none of these things could have been stopped without some Democratic votes. I think that the shape of things to come is that there will be an up or down vote on the ending of the Bush tax cuts, or should I say the imposition of the Obama tax increases, and the current status, which is tax cuts for all, will survive. Why? Because Democrats are nervous about it.
John, very quickly, and a big shift of gears here to the UN, where President Obama gave his second address at the opening session of the UN General Assembly. This year, he really seemed to put most of his eggs in the Middle East peace basket, wants to, of course, have that done in a year. You and I have gone over the details many times. My question to you real briefly is, do you think this motivated the bulk of the General Assembly that to see this as a key to solving a lot of different problems around the world?
Not in the least. As much as President Obama can move a crowd, and as popular as he might be on the world scene, the fact is that he was making a case for fair treatment of Israel and the Palestinian Directorate in a body that is overwhelmingly anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian, that once cheered Yasser Arafat when he spoke there with a pistol in his back pocket. My guesstimate is that the United Nations will continue to pass its anti-Israel resolutions, be very hostile to Israel, and that nothing the president said could really make an impact on them. The United Nations is increasingly becoming a center in which people who are despots, like Ahmadinejad or, of course, Libya's Gaddafi, can come up and put on a performance for the rest of the world. I rather enjoyed watching Gaddafi tell everyone that he favored the Somali pirates because, in a sense, we are all pirates. This kind of stuff reduces the credibility of the United Nations, and I'd say before they took any action that was taken seriously on the world, pay their parking tickets back.
John, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks, as always, for being with us.
On a very busy day on the domestic and international fronts, I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.